Here we are going to talk about Pesach. Everyone, welcome to Pesach season. Welcome to the Wednesday night Shir series, Beyond the Parsha. We are going on our special Yontif version, where we are going to discuss Pesach. And the title, I don't fully remember because I did not make source sheets for this week. This week is going to be a little more interactive, perhaps, because, you know, I'm a guy making Pesach for the first time, and I'm a guy. So, and making Pesach for the first time. So it is going to be a little more interactive. So please let me know of things that I do not necessarily know. And if I mix up a stove and a grate and any of these things, let me know exactly what's going on. I think I have it down, but you know, let me know. And what we are going to try to discuss is the difference between Pesach cleaning and spring cleaning. You know, many people have the idea that, oh, it's time for Pesach. We got to go dust the top of the ceiling fan. What are we going to do? That's what we got to do. Do not confuse spring cleaning with Pesach cleaning. I can pretty much guarantee you that unless someone has walked up to their ceiling fan and decided, hey, I want to eat a sandwich up here, you do not have to worry about what's happening on top of your ceiling fan. So to quote many Rabbanim, if you want to go and clean on top of your ceiling fan, that is a wonderful thing to do and it's a great thing to do, but don't blame the rabbis for that. It's not Pesach cleaning, that is spring cleaning. But let's start at the very beginning. So we know the Gemara in Pesachim tells us that Sho'alim Midorshim Hilchos HaPesach Kodim HaPesach Shloshim Yom. If you look at Hilchos Pesach in the Shulchan Aruch, first thing you are going to find is that you're supposed to start learning Hilchos Pesach 30 days before Pesach. Now, why is that the case? So some want to say it's because there are a lot of Hilchos Pesach, and that is true. If you look, it takes up a tremendous amount of Shulchan Aruch. That is a lot. The Gemara is a machlokas whether exactly it has to be 30 days, maybe it could be 2 weeks, but either way, we are pretty much in the prime zone getting ready to learn Hilchos Pesach. How do we know this? Mishnah Berurah tells us, the Gemara tells us, because when Moshe came down from learning Kol HaTorah Kula, so he went and he taught the people about Pesach Sheni on Pesach Rishon. That was 30 days before. So we say normally you need 30 days, that's what we try to assume. We try to learn the halachos all 30 days, but again, specifically, as we approach Pesach, we want to learn more and more about it. Mir Hashem, we are going to have another Wednesday night shir before Pesach, where we are going to go through the Seder and go through the different halakhic issues that come up. We'll give some nice ideas too, but we'll save those for many of the drushes that will come. As just as a quick curiosity question, how many people here are here for Pesach?
Second days.
Okay. Not as bad. Not as bad as we thought. All right, second days. All right, we'll take that. Okay, not as bad as we thought. All right, looking forward, so we'll save all the drushes for second days. So, right, well, now I just lost the train of thought. Right, so we know when it comes to Pesach, we're going to have a shir on the Seder and all of the halachic issues that might or might not come up, and it's going to be another way of preparing, but Hachana is a tremendously important part of any Yontif, but especially Pesach. If we go to the Seder without doing anything to prepare for it, both physically, mentally, and everything, it's just not the same experience as we can have. We need to be prepared for it. We need to work on it. We need to get ready for it. So we're going to start by talking about some of the halachos of cleaning up for Pesach and how exactly that is supposed to go. So a few things we need to know before we get into the details. Maybe we'll take a short tour of a house and we'll discuss exactly what to do in each room or what would be or what would not be necessary in those rooms. So number one is we know that chametz is the enemy during this time of the year. Chametz has extra stringencies that we don't find by anything else. We know we have treif food year-round. There's food that is not kosher that we are not allowed to eat. So it's true, basar b'chov, you're not allowed to get hana from, but there's no isser if it happens to be not bal yira, bal yimatzeh. Just finding it in your house is not an isser. We try not to have it in our house. We try to avoid all of these things. But when it comes to chametz, we take everything a lot more seriously. And homiletically, we'll discuss this a lot as Pesach comes closer. Chametz is the Yetzer Hara. Chametz represents laziness. It represents arrogance. It's a terrible thing. We want to stay away from it and all of that. But there are stringencies lahalacha that come up when it comes to chametz that we don't find anywhere else. Number one, let's say someone eats something be'isser. Someone eats something that's not kosher. Someone eats something that they are not allowed to eat. What is the shear for that achila? Normally, anytime we have any sort of isser when it comes to eating, it's a gezayis. It's the size of an olive. So we'll talk about that a little bit later in this year, maybe also. Kezias is sometimes confused for something much bigger, but it is the size of an olive. we, when it comes to the mitzvah of matzah, let's say, we try to be careful to make sure we have a kizayis mitzvah midor, right? So we're going to have, so everyone's munching away, making sure they get it without talking. Everyone's being so careful. Do what you need to do. So you could do that, but if that's disgusting to someone or someone can't have that much, remember, it's the size of an olive. So you can figure that out. And you don't want to also have a chumra habali de kula. I was telling Dr. Freeman earlier, when 2 years ago on Pesach, it was just me and my in-laws and my wife's grandmother. And it was, you know, it was a smaller seder, so it came time for the matzah. I'm like, well, why not? It's not like 50 people around that I have to be talking the whole time, you know? So I'm like, okay, I'll try to do the matzah thing, you know, like everyone's like. So I went, and then all of a sudden, not going down, had a little bit of a choking incident on the matzah, didn't get to finish the seder. Chumra ba asili dekula. Got to be careful. So again, a kizayis is not that big. So everyone should have a kizayis of matzah, kizayis of marah, kizayis of the korich sandwich maybe, whatever it is. But normally a kizayis is the measurement that is needed for an isra achila. But when it comes to chametz on Pesach, what is the din? It's asur b'mashahu. Any amount of chametz you have. If you want to go and figure out a way to have a slice of pizza and take one bite now and then wait 10 minutes, one bite then, first of all, you might need to go see a different type of doctor. And number two is that still will not work because chametz is asur b'mashahu on Pesach. Another thing is that chametz is asur b'hana. You are not allowed to feed your animal chametz on Pesach because you are not allowed to get any sort of hana from it. So we know that's true by Basar B'Chalav as well. And Basar B'Chalav has its own reasons why that is also uniquely strict. But the same thing applies by Pesach as well. By Pesach, it's not allowed to be in your house. You're not allowed to own it at all. There are poskim that talk about, let's say you own stock in a company that has chametz. What's a publicly traded company that has chametz? McDonald's is what? That's the one that everyone uses, yeah. That's the classic example. Nabisco is the classic example everyone uses. So if someone owns stock in Nabisco before Pesach, the poskim discuss, do you have to sell that stock? When you guys come and sell your chametz with me, we'll make plenty of times for that, whoever wants to. So when you guys come and sell your chametz, you're going to have to say, by the way, I have 50 stock of Nabisco that I'm going to sell to John Brown or whoever the guy is that we are going to sell to, right? So do you have to include that? Some want to say if you own 50 shares, you don't have any decision-making power in the company. Others want to say, no, but you're still a partial owner. Others say, so what, you're a partial owner? What does that have to do with chametz? It just happens to be that they're selling chametz. Okay, big question. But again, these questions don't come up all the time. They do kind of come up by Basar B'Chalav a little bit, but not necessarily. We also know the Rambam starts off with 8 mitzvot that come up on Pesach. There are 5 los ases and 3 ases. And 6 or 7 of them relate to getting rid of the chametz, not having chametz, making sure you don't find it in your house, you don't appear on it. All these things, we focus on making sure we get rid of the chametz. Now, what is considered chametz? Chametz is anything that comes from the 5 grains. Now, what are the 5 grains? We're going to need help with this. We have rye, spelt, oats, wheat, and barley, right? Right? Those are the 5 grains. Spelt, a bit of a question, whether that is actually one of the 5 grains or not. So let's say someone has a spelt matzah. Is that going to be allowed? So we seem to assume maybe, we'll discuss that if anyone needs to do that. But those are the 5 grains. Those are the 5 grains that can become chametz. And in turn, those are the 5 grains that can be used for matzah, right? Because again, part of this homiletic idea that chametz represents laziness and arrogance, the same tools that you use to have matzah, which is wonderful, are the same tools which can become chametz, which are awful, right? So those are the 5 things that are going to become chametz. But we know that us Ashkenazim, not Sfardim, us Ashkenazim have taken upon ourselves a different stringency, which is known as kitniot, however you want to say it. Kitniot are certain things that can be turned to look like bread type things. The Shulchan Aruch discusses this, the Mishnah Berurah discusses this and gives a few reasons why. Number one is that maybe people will see and they'll think that you're eating bread and that's going to be a problem. Others want to say that since they grow together, they grow nearby, so we're going to confuse them and it's going to end up leading to people eating chametz. Again, a little bit of shaky reasonings. So we're going to get there in 1 second. Right. So the Sfardim said, "Come on, that's not a real concern." The Beit Yosef quotes some who say it's a minhag shel shtus shel hevel. It's not a real minhag, whatever it is. We Ashkenazim hold of it, and it's something that has been going on since the 1300s, something which we take minhag very seriously, and we can have a more in-depth shiur about kitnios another time, but we take this seriously. Also, Dan asks, what about nowadays? So nowadays, this kind of expresses itself in a lot of ways. If you go to a hotel for Pesach, I remember I went to a hotel the last bunch of years, and not this year, but the last bunch of years, went to a hotel for Pesach, and they had this barbecue one night, and they had these buns that I could have sworn were real buns, and then I'm like, wait, they taste even better than real buns. How could this possibly be kosher le Pesach? And the answer is, maybe it wasn't. No, I assume it was. But the answer is, they have all these ways of creating all these breads. But what about something like quinoa? Right? Quinoa is that classic question, because quinoa is something which should fit the definition of kitnios according to the reasoning, right? Something that looks a lot like it, just like rice. You could have rice bread. It looks a lot like bread, so it's going to get people confused. So quinoa seems to fit that bill. I know they have quinoa cutlets, and they have quinoa this and quinoa that. So maybe that would be the same thing. So is quinoa going to be kosher Pesach? So one year the OU came out and said no. Then the next year the OU came out and said yes. Now the Star K did extensive research on it, and they found that some of the reasons do specifically exist, but they found that there are some companies which specifically do it in the right way for Pesach. So there are kosher le-Pesach types of quinoa, which is what we try to use. So there is a way to have kosher quinoa. Again, none of this is actual chametz. If you saw it in your house, you do not have to burn it and destroy it. You do not have to have a whole bedikah for the kitniot, but we try to get rid of kitniot, and we do not eat kitniot as best as we can. So quinoa, again, we can assume would be okay. This expresses itself in another way, which is, let's say you have a chole of any sort. So someone's not feeling well, and they need to take medicine that has kitniot on the coating. Right, you know, so the Advil coating is very good, right? So maybe that's kitniot. Maybe. But if you're a chole, if you need to take medicine, so kitniot, don't worry about it, you're totally fine. Anyone who's has a baby at home, that is also okay. If you're going to feed a baby baby food, just about every baby food is kitniot. So that would be okay. You're allowed to give babies kitniot. One thing you should be concerned about, or you should try to take upon yourself, is if that you are giving your child kitniot baby food, maybe wash out the dishes in the bathroom sink instead of the kitchen sink. It's not going to trafe anything up, and it's going to be batel, not by shishim. Normally we need 60 times, but here it's just going to be batel barov. If a little bit of rice falls into your chicken soup, a little bit of kitniot falls into your chicken soup, you don't have to worry about it, it's going to be okay. But again, we try to stay away from kitniot as best as we can. Rav Moshe has a tshuva where they talk about quinoa, and they talk about potatoes, let's say. Potatoes are something that we turn into everything, right? There's potato starch bread, potato this. Imagine if potatoes were kitniots as well. What would we eat? Right? We'd just have matzah and cream cheese. That's about it. So if potatoes were kitniot as well, but Rav Moshe has a whole tshuva where he discusses that we don't make new things to the gezeira. So it's true that they just didn't have this question at that time. They didn't know what potatoes were capable of. So they just didn't have that question at that time. But we are not in the business of bringing on new gezeiras upon ourselves. Whatever they said is going to be kitniot, leave it at that, and we don't have to worry about new things. So beans, green beans, string beans, all those things might be an issue on Pesach. What about peanuts? So everyone thinks peanuts, but Rav Moshe specifically says, I don't know why peanuts are a problem. So peanuts, no hechsher comes out and says, because there are a lot of people who say it might be an issue, they all say, oh, maybe, whatever, but Rav Moshe pretty explicitly says peanuts would not be an issue. So again, everyone can do what they want with that. We'll talk about that if you have a... Right. Right. We're very lucky nowadays. We have the OU app. We have the CRC app. We have... I see these OU... the Jewish actions around. There's tons of guides of things as to what we are and are not allowed to have and different brands. Everyone's got a brand of something, and there's... The manufacturers know what they're doing. You know, maybe we'll talk about Gebrux another time as well. Maybe we'll talk about, right, Gebrux is another thing that some people don't have wet matzah. Just a Shiloh to give us, yeah.
Ashkenaz person by mistake purchases or is given kitniot product. What do you do with it? Just put it on the side?
Yeah, you don't need to sell it or burn it or anything. Just put it on the side. You shouldn't eat it. Right. So there's actually a good question that was raised this week. And the Rav Avadia and others talk about it. So there was a guy who, two unfortunate questions. One was a guy whose mother or whose family was always anti-kidney. They didn't understand it. They don't get it. And I hear that. You know, there's a certain emunas hachamim that you need in this, but they were very anti, and they typed in kidney should be allowed on Pesach online, and they found this article from all these rabbis that said, oh yeah, of course, kitniyot, you can get rid of it. You don't need it. What's the purpose? All irrelevant. So they decided they are not going to have kitniyot. They are not going to follow the minhag of kitniyot for Pesach. So now this guy is going over to his family's house, and they'd be very offended if he doesn't go. What is he allowed to eat? Is he allowed to eat at all? But the more common question is, let's say an Ashkenazi man marries a Sephardi girl, right? And now they're going to go to the in-laws for Pesach, and they have all kitniyot dishes. So what is that man allowed to eat? So they say the dishes won't become treif because it's kitniyot. It's not chametz. If it was chametz, then obviously it would become treif. So it's not treif. So can he eat? He shouldn't eat the rice. He shouldn't eat the actual kitniyot itself. But to say that the kelim are going to pasul it, it's a little weak. Right? Rav Avadia talks about this. Rav Moshe talks about this. The intermarriages, as they in the good way, the intermarriages that come and the different ramifications that come from it. So it's a pretty nice idea. So if you're going to go and have kitniyot on Pesach, then go start slichos in the beginning of Tishrei. Which part? Right, so, you know, but yeah, they never used to have this issue back in the times of the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam, because how would someone from one place meet someone from another place? Nowadays, Baruch Hashem, we have that issue, so it's a good thing. It's a good issue to have. Good, so now...
What did you just say about
Slichos?
I didn't get it.
Oh, no, so Sfardim starts Slichos in the beginning of Tishrei. So they wake up early all month. So the Ashkenazim, they start the Motzei Shabbos before. So it's, you know, certain times of year you want to associate yourself with the Sephardim, and certain times of year you want to associate yourself with the Ashkenazim. It's good. 9 days, right? Just joking, everyone's good. We should be proud of whatever we are. We should embrace it. Baruch Hashem. Okay, now, how do we get rid of chametz in general? So what do we do to get rid of our chametz? So number one thing we do is what's called bittul chametz. So we say this special magic passage. We say, all chametz that I have and that I own and that's in my possession, I want it to be as if it's the dust of the earth. I want no part of it. It's no longer mine. Unbelievable. Magic passage. And all of a sudden, I no longer own any chametz. This is beautiful. We do it at night when we do the bedika, and we do it the next morning before we do the biur. No longer our chametz. We are all good to go. So if so, someone asked me the obvious question. Oh. We can go home right now. We're good. We have bittul. Why do we need to have this year at all? We should just go home and we should all just say that special magic passage before Pesach and then we're good. So what exactly is the purpose of cleaning and getting your house ready? So the answer is that, let's say someone goes to sleep and they, I know some people who have a little special dessert storage by their bed. No, anyone here? No one? Okay, I know someone who does. And they have this special little area for dessert by their bed. Yeah, you do. Yeah, I knew it. Yes, a little special dessert area by their bed. So let's say you did this bittul and you forgot and you said, none of it's going to be mine anymore. And then you're going to sleep and you reach under and you find that donut that you've been saving. Imagine? And now it's Pesach and you're like, oh my God, this is the donut I've been waiting for. So we want to avoid that type of situation. So that's why we do a bedika. We clean our house to make sure we get rid of all chametz that we possibly can. So now the opposite question. Now that we have bedika, why do we need bittul? So that answer to me is pretty obvious, but to others who, when I clean and I'm sweeping, Lana asks me to sleep at home and I sweep and she's like, did you even try? Like, what about all of this? So I understand how that could happen to someone, but other people who do, I guess, sweep normally and do clean up normally, maybe this shouldn't happen, but no, we're afraid that you might have missed a spot. We also do something else, which is very much talked about, and maybe we'll discuss. I'm still trying to figure out what we're going to talk about at Shabbos HaGadol, maybe this, but I'm not sure. About, we also sell chametz. So a lot of people sell their chametz, and we know we sell it to a goy, and we buy it back after Pesach. This harama, this trickery, how could it possibly be? What are we really doing? The answer is that it's a real sale, and that's why we try our best. I know Rabbi Willig, for 30-something years, has made sure to sell to the same guy, John Brown. Mr. Brown is the most well-known guy in all of Riverdale, because he buys millions of dollars worth of chametz every single year. This is a real estate guy who understands how transactions work. Rabbi Willig wanted to make sure you get someone who understands how everything works. And you have all the different types of kinyanim. You have 6 kinyanim that you do just to make sure we're yotzei it based on a tosefta, where the tosefta tells us that if someone's on a boat and they have no choice, we have a way of selling the chametz. It's a good, legitimate way. A lot of people have a chumrah that they're not going to sell their chametz gamor. That is until they go and realize that they have very expensive bottles of whiskey and schnapps that they don't want to get rid of. So I'm here for you, so don't worry about it. So we sell our chametz as well. So we have all these different ways of getting rid of our chametz. But now we are going to discuss practically for all of us when it comes to the house and when it comes to cleaning our possessions, what is it that we are supposed to do? How are we supposed to do everything? So we'll take a little tour through the house. We'll give a few rules first, and then we'll go through the house. Everyone should feel free to ask any questions and chime in and tell me what I'm messing up, because again, I'm not here to bother. And I know some of you might be thinking, oh, what is this guy? Okay, you know, we've done some research on this, but you're right. I do not have as much Pesach making experience as most of you. So definitely chime in and let me know. And questions, if we can't answer them now, Baruch Hashem, we will certainly answer them right after.
Because
that's the din is that each sip is its own new bottle. I wouldn't mess with the whiskey in that. I'm just, if you think I'm going to chime in on that, then you.
I mean, come on.
Certain things you don't involve yourself in. I'm not involving myself in that. So number one, yeah. Like, what is the Kiddush, right, Kiddush Club over Pesach? Probably a little more boring, right? Nah, I figured. Maybe I won't sell that one back to you guys. So that's it. All right. Rule number one, when it comes to cleaning for Pesach. We're going to give four main rules, and then we are going to apply them throughout the house. Rule number one is that any place where there is chametz, where there is a room where chametz does not go into, or anytime you have an area of the house where there is no chametz for sure, you never take any chametz, that room or that area does not need a bedika of any sort. Any other cleaning you want to do in that type of room. So if you have a crawl space in an attic, I got to go sweep it out. Don't blame that on the rabbis. That is not the rabbi's fault. No one told you have to do that for chametz cleaning. No one told you have to get rid of the chametz there. You want to pull out the fridge and get what's behind the fridge. You want to pull out the oven and get behind the oven. That's a nice thing to do. But unless anyone sat behind there and decided to have a sandwich and just sit down and read a magazine while they're sitting there and eating, you do not need to go... nothing's going behind mine, but I hear what you're saying. Maybe behind the in a crawl space in the attic. There you go. Okay, maybe the kitchen idea. So maybe in the kitchen we could be a little more careful. That might have been. But if you have a on top of the ceiling fan in your room, again, I don't think you have to worry about the chametz there. You do not have to worry. That is rule number one. Says the Mishnah Berurah, though. The Mishnah Berurah says that is true unless you have small children running around the house. So any house where you have grandchildren running around or you have small children running around, and then you might have to check areas that kids might get to. When I found a pickle in the closet somewhere and I found a Cheerio in who knows where.
They roll.
Somehow, and I don't know where he stores these things, and Aaron figures out a way to get things into very strange places. So we are going to have to do a more extensive bedika. But again, the crawl space in the attic and in the garage, not so concerned about. You do not have to worry about that. Don't make yourself crazy with that. If you want to do the cleaning then, that's a nice thing to do. Maybe save it for June or July or August when it's a little hotter outside. But do what you got to do. But again, any room that you do not bring any chametz into does not need a bedika. Rule number two, any chametz that is not ro'i la'achilas kelev, any chametz that is not ro'i, that is not even edible for a dog, that is not considered chametz. So now, let's say you are not sure about something, and you think there might be crumbs somewhere, you think there might be a bagel somewhere, and you're just not sure, if you spray some sort of cleaning device on it, that would get rid of its status of chametz, because now it is no longer ro'i la'achilas kelev. It's unbelievable. The soap manufacturers, I don't think they had this in mind when they made their products, but they did a tremendous amount of good for halacha. When we clean things with soap, it totally changes its category in halacha. It's no longer an iser product because now it is no longer edible. People eat soap? Okay. I don't got to bring a tie on someone else. So if you spray something on it, then you are going to be fine. So when you clean and you clean with some sort of disinfectant spray or whatever it may be, then it is no longer chametz. So, ro'i la'achilas kelev is no longer chametz. Number three, the iser of owning chametz and of having chametz in the house is only for a kezias or more. So, as we said in the beginning, there are some chumras of chametz, like tasting chametz. Even a tiny bit of chametz is going to be a major issue, and we really have to try to avoid that. But when it comes to owning the chametz, which is the issue, so that is only an issue when it is a kezias of chametz. So if you have books in your bookshelf that maybe you've eaten, you've had meals with them, and you weren't sure if there's maybe some chametz on it, unless you have a full bagel in your book, which again, I don't think anyone does. Maybe I do, but very possible I do. But if others do not have that, then again, you probably would not need to worry about it. So you can go and you can shake it out, but you should know that owning is an issue with a kezias, and other than that, we are going to be fine. So when it comes to crumbs, so when, you know, we have benchers that we use all year round in our dining room for Shabbos meals and for Yontif meals. So those benchers, may as well move. It's not a good idea to use the same benchers, even though you're probably not going to find something more than a kezias, and everyone's got more than enough benchers from the various things that they've been to. So benchers, okay, switch it up. But in general, if I don't want to learn over Pesach because maybe I used the Svarim while I was eating, and maybe, okay, you can learn over Pesach. You can take my word for it. If that's what's holding you back from learning on Pesach, go ahead and learn as much as you want on Pesach. Oh, very good. Probably not. It depends on the situation, but you know, it would have to be a legitimate amount of crumbs together to make that happen. I'm trying to think if there's like a cookie with pieces, probably not.
I would say if you have like a stack of benches and each of them had a few crumbs in it and you put them all together.
Right, probably not. That'd be something that would be edible as a kezias, and that's not going to be an issue. Then, lastly, is any place in your house, this is rule number 4, any place in your house where you have no intent to use any of those things from that room, what you can do is you can close off that room and sell everything in that room, and then you are going to be fine for Pesach. So let's say someone is going away for Pesach and they are not going to be home at all. So technically, they could just close their house and cover everything, or not even cover everything because they're not going to be there, sell everything in the house, and then they are going to be okay. What our minhag is to do nowadays is, let's say someone's going away for Pesach. I know I did this for the first bunch of years that I was married because I was always away, is we would separate everything into one room, or into the whole house. We would have we'd move all of our chametz out of one room. We would do a bedikah on one specific room. So we always did it in the second bedroom where we knew nothing. We didn't really always have that many options, but we had the second bedroom where there was no real food in. So we would do a bedikah on that room to be yotzei our din of bedikah, and everything else, the rest of the house, that we would sell. So someone going away, go and choose a room like your bedroom where there might not be as much food, unless you're someone of the dessert category that we spoke about. But, you know, you choose a room where there's not going to be so much chametz, do a small bedikah on that room, and then sell the rest of the house, and you are totally fine to go away for all of Pesach.
If you do that, and then for some reason during coma, you left something in the house, are you allowed to go back into your house?
So very good. So it depends how the sale exactly goes. Depends on the situation. Most likely can go in but shouldn't stay. There's talks of it, yeah. I mean, you should also try to plan accordingly. If you know you're going to be walking in and out the whole time, so then maybe clean one of the front parts of the room. Because, you know, Ba'yira, Ba'yamatsi might be new, but then again, you don't really own it. So really, midin, you're probably okay, but you should certainly plan ahead for that. So most people going away for Pesach, that's what you would do. Unless you're going to be back, then you could do a real bedikah, and then you would be totally fine. So those are the 4 rules again. Let's just review what we have done thus far. So we started out talking about Sholem Midorshim B'Hilchos HaPesach, that we start to try to learn the Halachos of Pesach before Pesach, get ourselves in the mood, get ourselves ready, because you need Hachana for anything important in life. And Pesach is absolutely no different. We want to make sure that we have a Hachana for Pesach. We then discussed the chumras of chametz, how aser b'mashahu, and it's the yetzer hara, it's terrible, we want to get rid of it, can't even see it. It doesn't mean that if you're walking in a supermarket on Pesach and you're in Rite Aid and you see Entenmann's that you have to turn around. You don't have to do that. It just means things that you own. So we spoke about how machmir is, maybe you have to even sell your stock. You probably don't. So if anyone owns stock in those types of companies, you're good. So we spoke about the chumras of chametz. We then spoke about kitnios a little bit and a little bit of the background with that, how it's not the same as chametz. So if you find it in your house, it's not the end of the world. If you have it mixed in with your pie, again, not the end of the world. It's not actually chametz. It's something that we Ashkenazim avoid. If someone's a chola and someone needs it for whatever reason, don't think twice, you're fine. But just because I miss rice, I want some rice, maybe stay away. We spoke about quinoa. Try to get the Star K ones because they did a tremendous amount of research. There should be Kasher LePesach quinoa available. There's a lot of different reasons given for the kidneys. There's a lot of Chacham Tzvi has a whole thing that we don't want it to... Okay, we'll talk about that another time. So that was kidneys, and we spoke about the different ways that we get rid of chametz. So we spoke about bittul, the magic formula that we say, everyone, every chametz that I have is no longer mine. Everyone should make sure when they are doing bittul chametz that they understand exactly what they're saying. If you're using a machzor, and you read the text, kol chamira de chamira, and you don't understand what you're saying, then it is borderline worthless. So make sure you're using an art scroll one, or something where you understand all the words. The words aren't too difficult, but still, make sure you understand exactly what you are saying. We want to disassociate ourselves from the chametz. That is the goal, so you do bittul. But if we do bittul, then why do we need bidika as well? For our friends that have the dessert by their bed. We want to make sure that you're not going to find something in your house and you're not just going to go and eat it. If we have bidika, then why do we need bittul at all? Because some people don't clean so well, like me. And then we said there's another way to do all of this, which is to sell your chametz, which is something that we do. We discussed that a little bit. The Tosefta tells us that we can. It's harama. No, it's a real sale. In fact, they say the Divrei Chaim, the Sanzer Rav, I think he did this huge selling of the chametz, and the government found out about this, and they arrested him for not paying sales tax on the chametz. Oh, so that's legit. But then he explained to them exactly what it was, so then they let him out of jail. I'm sure it was a good excuse to get him in jail. But again, it's legit. That's what it's there for, and that's what we do. Some don't like to sell chametz gomor. There's always a good story with Rav Shechter. Rav Shechter, a lot of things that he'll paskin are not necessarily things that he'll hold of himself. So Rav Shechter himself paskins, and he always tells people that that you can sell chametz gomor, and it's not an issue. But for himself, in his own house, he wouldn't sell. He would just throw things away. It wasn't the biggest deal for him. So one of his top Talmidim married his daughter, and it came time for Pesach, and his daughter was throwing everything away. And this Talmid looked at her and said, I was in your father's shir for so many years. He paskins you're allowed to sell chametz gomor. What are you doing? He's like, we would never sell chametz gomor at home. So again, there's a minhag to sell chametz gomor, a nice minhag, but again, that is more than okay if someone wants to do it. We will be here. We will work out times, and an email will go out. Everyone is welcome to... Yeah. Everyone is welcome to join us in the selling of chametz. We then went into four different rules that come up when it comes to getting rid of our chametz for Pesach. Number one is any room where you know that no chametz went into. Classic example in the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch is a wine cellar. I guess no chametz goes into a wine cellar, unless the wine itself. Okay, but if any room that you know for sure that no chametz went into, or if you know for sure that no chametz went on top of the ceiling fan, then you do not need to check that area.
A closet.
And we know, as we said, do not blame the rabbis for spring cleaning. It is different. It is not cleaning for Pesach. The rest of the house cleaning for Pesach should not take that long. It'll take like a few hours, but it's not the same as a spring cleaning, so do not blame the rabbis for that. Mishnah Berurah said, I'll tell you that's nothing, again, but it's not like a 6 week, not that it's bad, not that you shouldn't do spring cleaning. Spring cleaning is a wonderful thing, but it could also be a June cleaning and a July cleaning and an August cleaning, so there are a lot of opportunities for that people don't have to be upset at Pesach for. This is unless you have kids, in which case maybe you do have to be a little more careful as to where they could possibly go and put things, which is in a lot of different spots that you would not have necessarily thought of. Interesting, I was just thinking, I heard a nice vort in the name of Rabbi Sachs, Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, heard from my friend Rabbi Moshe Watson. He's telling me that if you look throughout the Jewish holiday calendar, you'll find that when it comes to people who are not observant at all or who have some sort of Jewish roots, there are certain holidays which they are more involved in and certain holidays which they are less involved in. So if you go through the Shalosh Regalim, let's say, right, we have Sukkot, Pesach, and Shavuos. So in order from most to least of what people follow, so Pesach, everyone has a Pesach Seder, right? Sukkot, a little less, and then Shavuos, give me a break. So Rabbi Sachs wanted to say, you see from the amount of effort that goes into them, you see what the following would be. So Pesach, which takes a tremendous amount of preparation, and it's cleaning and chametz, and it's so much preparation, that everyone's on board for, because the more hachana we have, the more excitement we have going into something, it's more exciting. Sukkot is a little more, so there'll be a little more. And then Shavuos, not much preparation, even though we have all Sfira, whatever it is. But practically, the work that goes into it helps with the observance. I know when I, back to that story, when I went to the the matzah situation that I had. So we did go to the hospital, and I was totally fine. But when we went, there was people there that were talking about, yeah, we had a Seder. It was such yummy pork. It was great. Again, everyone wanted to make sure they had a Seder. But, okay, what they do at their Seder, we can't control. But it was an interesting point that he said nonetheless. So that was rule number one. Any place where there is no chametz, so you do not need to check that area. Number two, was any chametz that is not ro'i la'achilas kelev? Well, later than I thought. Any chametz that is not ro'i la'achilas kelev, anything that a dog would not eat, is not considered chametz. So if you spray some soap on something, if you spray something on something, you are going to be totally fine in terms of having chametz proper in your house.
That's fantastic.
Nice. Like that. Number three, the isser of owning chametz is only when you have a kezias or more of chametz. So if you have the tiny crumbs in your book, don't worry about it, you're okay. And number four was any place where you have no intent to use any sort of chametz. So close it off, make sure everything in that room is going to be sold, and you are going to be totally fine. So it should not be such a wild thing. You can go and you can sell the rest of the room. Again, just trying to make sure everything in there is sold and they're not a bunch of random things. So that should be okay. Now let's take a little bit of a tour through the house and see the different things that may or may not come up. We'll end in the kitchen. And again, most questions, email me anytime, text me, call me, whatever you want to do. We'll get you an hour. We'll get you an answer very soon. Should not be an issue. Rabbi@YIFH, you all have my cell phone, and should not be a problem. So bathrooms. How should you clean the bathroom? So any obvious chametz that you have, get rid of it. Any chametz that would be there, anything that you're not sure about, maybe that's going to be chametz, maybe not. You could put it in the pile with the other stuff that you're going to be covering and selling anyway. But most of those things should be fine. See the CRC website, see the Jewish Action, see the list of cosmetics that are going to be totally fine. Something like toothpaste, for example. So there's a machlokas as to what the status of toothpaste is. Rav Schechter feels that all the toothpastes are not ro'i la'achilas kelev. No one's eating toothpaste. You'd be shocked. But no, okay, maybe. But no one's eating toothpaste. But still, if they're kosher le'pesach toothpaste, okay, maybe you can go and get that as well. If you can, again, all these things. Like, is it going to be chametz gum or no? But if you can, that's a nice thing to do. Back to the quinoa thing, actually. I think when I heard, so the OU was going back and forth with quinoa, right? So it was no and then yes. I think that part of the reason... There is, right? It's allowed.
I think
what the main thing was that the two major poskim for the OU was Rybelski and Rav Schechter. And Rybelski passed away recently, and Rav Schechter, there's a big machlokes going on. Rav Schechter was the one who felt it was okay. So while Rybelski was alive, I think they would go with Hipsock, but now the things have changed a little bit in terms of that. So maybe you could see your local Orthodox OU representative. So I have my uncle who works in the OU Kashrus division, so I'm texting him pictures all day, and we're in touch a lot. So any questions, please feel free.
A traveling kid is a kosher
lo-pesach. So again, it's subject to this machlokas about the toothpaste. The other stuff, you have to look at the, check out the apps, check out the websites. They all have a list of all the things that are good and not good for Pesach. So that should all be totally fine. Yeah. So again, is it going to be chametz that you're going to be chayiv curries for? Probably not. If you can go out and get another shampoo, maybe it would be okay. So that's what we're saying.
Then you start checking what you have in your bathroom.
So again, see what you have in your bathroom. If it's shampoos are usually considered fine, and soaps are usually fine, perfumes are usually fine, all these things are usually fine. If it's something that you think might be an issue, like a certain medicine coating, a certain pill this, a certain that, so... check it up. You know, all these things, they have all these things written out. These lists are Google. Make sure you're looking at the right things on Google. Google could be dangerous, as we pointed out before. A lot of people have a lot of opinions that are not necessarily qualified for anything, but since they have a platform, so just be careful what you're reading and where you're reading from. If you're reading on the OU website, the CRC website, that's okay. But just be careful where you're reading that, because you can find anything you want on the internet. If you want to find that Pesach no longer exists and that it's made up and that you can go out for pizza, you could probably find that as well. So be careful where you look for these types of things. Now let's go to the living room. So you go to the living room, you look on the couch for any obvious chametz, check the things quickly. You don't need, you know, if you want to go and vacuum it and whatever, that's a nice thing to do. Just check if there's any obvious chametz. Look in the drawers, make sure no one put anything in there. You never know. Maybe you put some chametz in there, a little donut. You never know. So go and make sure that there's no obvious chametz there, and then you should be okay. Dining room. So check in the chairs.
The couches, you have to, you know.
Again, just pull it out. Look if there's any obvious chametz. Look if there's any obvious chametz. That's what you're saying. It doesn't necessarily... Again, all these things you could do, and the more, the great. You know, no one's saying that. I'm just talking about, may ikra din what needs to be done. So if you want to take out this stuff, it's not going to be more than crumbs, hopefully. Right? So look for any obvious chametz that's going to come up. If not, if you want to clean it anyway, this is a good opportunity to clean it. So I'm not saying you shouldn't clean it. I'm saying what you blame the rabbis for and what is necessary. That's all. But now, when it goes to the dining room, so again, look in the chairs. Make sure that there's no chametz stuck in the chairs. If you have a break front where there was a lot of hot chametz used, so what you want to do is you want to go and you want to close off the break front, put some sort of sign that it's not in use for Pesach, and that stuff will not be used for Pesach. Sell all the stuff inside, whatever it is, you are going to be okay with all of that for Pesach. So you can just leave that in the break front, and that would be totally fine. The benchers, as we mentioned before, even though is it going to be more than a kezayis? Probably not. Best to use different benchers because you don't want to get yourself involved in that, especially when it's something that you use all the time. When it comes to tablecloths and placemats, one second, tablecloth, placemats, and other types of things like that, if you run it through the washing machine, you are totally fine. That gets rid of all the chametz, that kashers it for Pesach. So a tablecloth, even though you've used it for the most pizza meal with extra bread, you are still going to be okay when you wash it for Pesach. Yes. Very good. Yeah, you can always use a Haggadah for a bencher. That is also highly recommended. Very nice. So you can always use a Haggadah. Haggadah is not just for the Seder night itself. It can be used the entire time. So if you want to get full use out of your Haggadah, go ahead and bench from it as well. And we should all use a bencher. Good chizuk. I like it. But again, tablecloths, other things that can be put in the washer dryer. What else from the kitchen can be put in the washer dryer?
Towels.
Very good. So plastic is a big question about whether it is able to be koshered or not. What does it mean? How can you wash a plastic tablecloth?
You could wash.
In the washing machine?
Yeah, I never used it for Pesach. Yes, but not dry it. Yes.
Really?
Plastic in the washing machine with towels or sheets. And then just lay it.
Everyone, not the...
Wow.
The heavy one.
So there's a big machlokas we're going to discuss.
Yeah, we used to put clear ones in the washing machine.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Okay, so... Plastic is a bit of a question whether you're able to kosher plastic in general. So we'll get back to you on that. But
no, I never.
Oh, okay. All right. So then you're okay. I didn't even know that was possible. Okay, good. There you go. This is why we do these types of things. This is good learning experience. Now, playrooms, check whatever bins or anything where there might be any sort of chametz. You can vacuum crumbs. Again, we're not as worried about in terms of Pesach. Still nice to get rid of the crumbs. Clean houses are nice. Wonderful. No problem. What? And you're going to get matzah crumbs anyway, so don't worry about it too much. Good. So now we are getting up to the kitchen, which is obviously the most important part. Okay, good. We still have a few minutes. So kitchen, which is obviously the most important part. So before we get into the kitchen, we have to understand there are two ways of koshering things. Number one is called libun. Libun is when we just go and destroy any sort of isra. We destroy the chametz. We burn it out. That's called libun. And then there's something called hagala, which is... through washing it, through bringing out the Isser. Instead of destroying the Isser, we bring it out and then it's batel. And when we do Hagala, you would need to wait 24 hours. But when it comes to Libun, when it comes to destroying the Isser, then you do not need to wait 24 hours. So that is the difference. One is Libun, which is destroying, and Hagala, which is just drawing something out. The difference, the major difference is the 24-hour wait. When you utterly destroy the chametz, when you destroy the isser, there is no need to wait 24 hours. But when you just do hagala and you do this process of koshering, then you would need to wait 24 hours before doing anything. So now let's go through different appliances in the kitchen and discuss what to do with them. So warming drawers. Warming drawers on Pesach are not recommended because they do not get hot enough to burn out any isser that may have been in there, because that is the point of a warming drawer. It does not get hot enough to the point where it will destroy the isser. What you could technically do is use a blowtorch, but I don't recommend that. Doesn't sound like a good idea. You could use a blowtorch. Just doesn't sound like a good idea to anyone, right? So you can, even with covering it, it's still there's really no way to use a warming drawer when it comes to Pesach. So anyone who planned on that, sorry. So that is a warming drawer. Now, when it comes to countertops, so plastic, as we mentioned, is a bit of a machlokas. If you can just cover it, that would be great. When it comes to marble or stone or other types of things, granite, other types of things like that, then what you do is you boil a pot of water and you roll the water while it's going, while it's really hot. You want to make sure you get the burning on it. You go, and that is the way that you kosher the countertops. Again, that is not through libun, that is through hagala. So we would try to wait 24 hours without getting any sort of chametz on it. So you go and you kosher the countertops like that. Again, something to stress is if there are little kids around in the house, maybe do the koshering when they're asleep. Or when they are not around, it is not the best idea to have them around. Some people like to use these steamers, right? The steamers, so there's a bit of a question when it comes to the steamers. It's more of a metzias question of knowing and understanding how exactly it works. So some people are afraid when you have boiling hot water and you're rolling it as it's boiling, so you know that the hot water is hitting the surface when it's still boiling, when it's still really hot. But when you have the steamer, so the second it comes out of the thing, it's very hot. But when it gets to the countertop, is it still that hot? The answer could be yes. So that's more of a metzias question. That's why some don't like it. I know Rabbi Billet said it was okay. My mom did that a lot. We had the steamer in the house. Some people like to use an iron. Again, just doesn't sound like a good idea. I don't know. Maybe, does anyone here use an iron? Yeah, you do?
No, I don't use it, but it is hot.
No, definitely. But in terms of like using that on your countertops, I just don't, it just doesn't sound like a smart thing to do. I don't know.
You may need a new countertop.
Yeah, it just doesn't sound like such a good idea. So again, the plastic is a bit of machlokas whether it can be koshered, so try to cover that. The other things can be koshered with the hot water over it. Again, try to make sure there's no chametz that comes there afterwards. Yeah, formica, so that's a machlokas. It's a type of plastic, right? So that's a bit of a machlokas. If you can cover it, great. If absolutely no other option, maybe. So that's what they talk about. I actually, in the research, I heard of that word for the first time, so... Now I'm so happy that you asked that. Okay, now ovens. Ovens have become relatively easy to do because ovens have what's called self-clean. And when you have a self-clean oven, the oven gets to about 900 degrees, 950 degrees, and that absolutely burns out everything inside. So clean out the oven for a minute before. Do self-clean for however long that takes. How long does it take to do self-clean?
3 hours.
3 hours?
Not everybody has
self-clean. Oh, we'll get there in a second. Do self-clean ovens. Do the self-clean, and then you are fine. No need to wait 24 hours, because that is what's called a libun. You are actually destroying all the iser because it's getting wildly hot. What people like to do is also the grates from their countertop, from their stovetop, if you have a gas oven. So you can go and you can put the grates in there. Again, we have to be very careful about fires. We don't want to cause any fires. We want to make sure that we're doing everything safe. So I don't know if that's going to cause a fire. A lot of people recommended that, so you should be careful. But some people recommend that as well. So if you have self-clean, you're good to go. No need to wait 24 hours. Let the self-clean run once. Bam, you are kosher lePesach. If you do not have the self-clean, so what you do is you go and you clean out again. Make sure that it's going to be clean. There's no obvious chametz. Run the oven at the highest temperature for about an hour. Don't use it for 24 hours, and then you are going to be totally fine because there is a principle called bolo kach polto. The same way that the tom and the stuff went in, it's going to come out. So if you know that the hottest this temperature could be is, I don't know, 600 degrees, so you know if you put it at 600 degrees, then it's going to come out. But that is not considered a libun, where it's actually destroying all the tom, it's destroying all the taste, so you would need to go and you would need to wait 24 hours after that.
An hour.
Hour and a half, yeah, one, yeah, either one. So that's all you need to do, run it at that temperature for an hour and a half. So the grates, let's say you have a gas oven, a gas stovetop. So what you do to kosher the grates, you can either put them in the oven, or you could just boil a pot of water on them for 15 minutes till it reaches boiling. Those grates have now become koshered. What you do with the middle of the stuff, right? So let's say you have four grates. So you have the middle area. So we try to cover that area. Let's say you have an electric stovetop. So you just run it till it turns red and leave it there for a little bit. That way it will burn out also. And again, the middle stuff is a little bit confusing. So again, you don't want to cause a fire. Make sure you're being careful. Some poskim say maybe be careful not to put any food in that middle area. Just leave it on the stovetops or on the counters. Try not to leave it in that middle area, and then you would be fine. If you could put some tin foil in that area, that would be great. If you can't, okay, is what it is. You don't want to put yourself into jeopardy because of that. All right, so the kashrus organizations, I think the OU pretty explicitly says, try not to put anything in the middle because that's a hard area to go and kasher. Now, dishwashers. So how does someone kasher a dishwasher? So when it comes to a dishwasher, there are always plastic parts involved. There's always some sort of plastic there, and we just discussed that there is not such a definitive way of koshering plastic. So what could you do? So the way we are going to assume, and Rabbi Leibowitz and many others have said, since it's a machlokes, if it's a major hassle to not use a dishwasher, then go ahead, clean out the dishwasher, make sure you have no chametz in it, run it once with the soap, make sure that it goes, that way you kosher it, and that will be good enough, you can use it. If it's just two people eating, either use plastic or wash your own things quickly. But if you're having a whole family, you're having 20... What did you say? Okay, that is one approach. But if you're having your entire family, you're having 25, 30 people, and instead of staying up all night doing the dishes, you could just put it in the dishwasher. Okay. Again, that's... Yeah, well, for Chol HaMoed also. After, yeah, but again, it depends on the hassle level. So it possibly could become kosher, so... If someone is having tons of guests and this is going to make their life a tremendous amount easier, so go and run it once, kosher it for Pesach, and then you could be okay. A high chair, clean it out well. That stuff gets wildly dirty. It's absolutely absurd. I don't know what that kid does in that thing. It's crazy. But high chairs, make sure you clean that thing. Microwave.
Do you have to cover the tray?
Cover the tray, yeah. Cover the tray. Good call. Cover the tray and, I mean, obviously clean it and cover it as well. When it comes to a microwave, so what we do with the microwave, we try not to, well, we don't use it for 24 hours before, and you clean out, make sure that all the stuff is clean. Don't use it for 24 hours. Replace the plate if you can. Either cover the plate or replace it just by putting whatever plate you're going to use there. Put a cardboard box. Put whatever you can. No use for 24 hours. Replace the plate. Make sure it's clean, and then put a cup of water in there and run it for 10 minutes, and you're good to go for Pesach. Plate is glass, right? So the question whether... yeah, technically. Again, just easier just to put your plastic plate in the microwave or use some cardboard.
It's not regular glass, it's like Pyrex. So
it's a very tricky... It's a tricky koshering thing, so let's just try to use that. So now in terms of the list of products, let's just look at the CRC app, the OU app. Pills are generally fine, as we pointed out, because at worst they're kitnios a lot of times, and they're usually okay. Cholesterol, yeah, again, most of the pills that anyone needs to take are going to be fine. Vitamins, again, listen to your doctors. They know what they're talking about. It's usually a good idea to take pills. You don't usually have to worry about those. Baby formula, as we said, is kitniose, but babies are allowed to have kitniose. So, again, you could do that. Clean out the dishes maybe in the bathroom sink instead of the regular sink, so there's not going to be any kitniose there. Baby food has become an issue over the years. Look at the OU guide and the CRC guide. They have a list of tons of baby foods. Worst case, you puree your own fruit. Okay, not the biggest deal in the world. Toothpaste and mouthwash, as we pointed out, is that machlokas. Rav Schechter seems to think it's not really lachios kelev. But again, if there's enough out there that you can do without it, kol hakavod to that. Let's just end with one quick idea like we like to do with a little bit of machshava. What we are going to try to do, what is our mindset supposed to be as we go into Pesach? And perhaps what the mindset is supposed to be is what Paro himself was saying as Pesach was occurring for the first time. The Medrash tells us that Paro was going around saying, you are no longer servants of Paro, you are now servants of Hashem. You are now servants of God. And what we think of, when we hear the word slavery, it is usually not such a positive connotation. We do not think, oh, slavery, oh, Baruch Hashem. No, and rightfully so that we think so negatively of slavery, because slavery to other human beings is terrible. It's a horrible thing historically. It's always been bad. It's never a good thing. You don't want to ever be a slave. Also, we would think, if I'm a slave to God, that's not good. Right? Just as being a slave to someone else would be terrible, so being a slave to God would be bad as well. But no, it's just the opposite. The ultimate nachas ruach comes from being a slave to Hashem. And just as people were slaves, think about it. When someone's a slave, every single thing that they do is for their master. What they do with their time, what they do with their money, what they do with their children, what they do, everything. What would the master say about this? That's the way we are supposed to be with Hashem. Oh, isn't that such a terrible existence? No. Hashem tells us, Tachas asher lovati es Hashem elokecha b'simcha uvetuv levav. Part of serving Hashem is to be with simcha. And part of what we try to do here tonight is show that, yes, Pesach is difficult, and yes, making Pesach is really hard. There's no denying that. First time here, trust me, we're feeling it. You know, it's not so easy.
We'll check back
with you, right? Yeah, there's a check back there before. So it's not as easy, and we get that. But remember that it's all supposed to be part of a simcha. What an opportunity we have to express that we are not owned by anyone, we are owned by God. God is our boss, and no better boss in the world than that. We have a tremendous opportunity here, whether we are going to be away, whether we are going to be home, whatever it is, a tremendous opportunity on Pesach to just sit back and reflect, how is our Avodas Hashem going? What a tremendous opportunity is, and hopefully we should all take advantage. We should all be zocha to a Chag Kosher V'Sameach, and many, many more in the future.
Oh, hey.
Oh.